First of all, let me thank all the organizers, in particular Lincoln and Sabrina, for inviting me in this very beautiful place. And today I will tell you something about open quantum system from two different perspectives. On one hand, I will explore a topic related to the transmission of correlations. On the other hand, I will focus on quantum measurements. Basically, as we will see, in these two different perspectives, environment plays a completely different role. In one case, the environment represents the noise against the transmission of correlation, so something that we would like to fight against. On the other hand, environment happens to be the place where we encode the information. If you want, a link between these two stuff will be provided on the by the set of the so-called entanglement breaking map. Of course, I will come back on this. But the reason why such maps provide a link between these two perspectives is related to the fact that they have been shown, it has been shown that they can be always represented as a measure and re-prepare process. But I will come back. So before starting in looking deeper in these two perspectives, let me just set up the framework. So whenever we have the evolution of a quantum system, we can always think it about as an input state which evolves and gives us, in the end, a so-called output state. Of course, if no noise is, if our system is protected by noise, it is isolated, we know that the evolution is described by the so-called by the Schrödinger equation, which integrated in times means that the output state is given by a unitary map applied on the input state. In general, actually, the system suffers the presence of an environment. And this means that we are no more guaranteed that we can write an equation like that. This is because of memory effect. But in general, for sure, we can write the input state as a function of an output state by applying a quantum map. Any quantum map needs to satisfy at least three stuff. It must be linear, and this is because it has to preserve superposition. Yeah, we ask it to be trace preserving, which means that we want it to transform states into states, and also we ask it to be completely positive, which means that when it is applied locally, it still have to give us a positive matrix, density matrix. In the last part of my talk, I will use this Steinspring representation, which is for the channel, which is useful when you manage to write the unitary transformation acting on the system and the environment seen as a global unitary, a global closed system. So let me now start with the first part, dealing with correlations transmission. So basically, one of the key idea of people working in quantum information theory is based on the distribution of entanglement. And this is actually a key ingredient for developing protocols of quantum computation, teleportation, and so on and so forth. So what does it mean, just in few words? Assume that you have a bipartite system, A and B, and you entangled it. You create some correlations between them. Then, by distribution of entanglement, I mean that, for instance, Alice takes half of her system in her laboratory and sends the other part to Bob. Of course, what we know that entanglement cannot be increased by neither local operation, or on A or on B, or by letting Alice and Bob share classical information. So, a legitimate question is, what is the quality of such evolution? We can address this question in different ways. For instance, we can compute the gate fidelity, which is a state fidelity minimized over all possible input state, or we can compute the channel capacity if we look for optimal communication rate on parallel copies of the system. Actually, my point of view will deal with entanglement transmission. So I will look at noise in the following way. We know that our initial state is entangled, and what we want to do is see whether part of the correlation survive when we apply a map locally. So from this point of view, we can draw a kind of noise spectrum for such channels. In the ideal case, we know that correlations are completely preserved. While in typical case, let me say noisy case, we have that part of correlations are destroyed. But if we are in the worst case scenario, all possible correlations disappear. Whatever is our choice for an initial state. Actually, when we study quantum maps, in order to establish whether or not a map is entanglement breaking, we have to apply it on a maximally entangled state. So as I told you before, Olebo proved that all possible entanglement breaking maps can be always written as a measure and reprepare process, which if you think is the worst thing that you can do on correlations. So what is the main difference between the typical case and the entanglement breaking evolution? In typical case, if at least part of the correlation survive, we can apply some error correction code locally. While if we are in presence of an entanglement breaking evolution, we can't do anything, at least locally. At least in this way, applying an error correction code either before or after the application of the map. So how to characterize the quality of such evolution? The standard protocols consist in comparing basically the noisy evolution with the ideal case. And we have some figure of merits such as the channel capacity, the gate fidelity, and so on and so forth. Actually, some years ago, me and Vittorio Giovannetti from Pisa introduced an opposite approach, which consists in comparing the noisy case, the typical case, with the worst case scenario. There are different ways to do this. In particular, now I will focus on concatenation. So, as I've said before, in worst case scenario, we have an entanglement breaking map. No correlations survive. However, it may happen that our map doesn't break all the correlations when it is applied the first time. But we need to apply it twice in order to break correlations. And so on and so forth. So, the noisier is the map, the lower will be the amount of time that we need to apply to concatenate the map with itself. The noisier is the map, the lower will be the amount of noise that we need to add to the map itself in order to get rid of correlations. So in this scenario, it is also possible to introduce the concept of amendable channel. So assume that your map is not entanglement breaking, but it breaks correlations only if applied twice. In this scenario, we have shown that it can happen, it is possible to have some filtering map which interposed between the double action of the map help us to preserve part of the correlations. And this is in a sense related also to the topic of that Daniel showed us before. Basically, the fact that we interpose some filters, which typically are unitary transformation, helps us to preserve correlations. Okay. So let me show you this effect in case of energy dissipation. In particular, there is a set of quantum channels going under the name of amplitude damping channel, which targets basically all process of energy dissipation, such as the loss of photons, or assume that you have a spin and you couple it with a cold bath, and it reaches equilibrium with this cold bath. So all this process of energy dissipation can be described by an amplitude damping channel. And this is basically what happens at the Bloch sphere. It shrinks and it translated to the ground state. This is the way in which these amplitude damping channels are written, and they depend on a coefficient going under the name of transmission coefficient. So in such a case, we found that exactly what I told you before, there exists a filtering map which put in between the two applications of the map let us preserve part of the correlations. So we have tested this also in the laboratory. In particular, we managed to simulate such effect in a bulk optic experiment together with Fabio Sciarrino and Paolo Mataloni from Sapienza University in Rome. And this is exactly the effect that I tried to describe before. As you see, when we apply this map twice, there are some regions where entanglement is completely lost. However, if you choose the right filter in between, in the same region, you manage to recover entanglement. Now, let me now assume that I do not have filtering maps, but I only have at disposal very bad maps, entanglement-breaking maps. Can I do? Is it possible to do something? Of course, if I apply them one after the other, I don't manage to do anything. However, again, if the map, such maps are entanglement-breaking of order 2, we found that there exist some cases in which, by cutting them in two pieces and reshuffling them, we manage to transmit correlations again. And this is basically due to the fact that in quantum mechanics, when the order in which we apply transformation is absolutely relevant. So here I apply first FIPSI, and here I manage to transmit entanglement. So let me show you once again an example dealing with energy dissipation. And we have been able to test this effect in the lab. So here there are the details in which here I showed you how to simulate this energy transmission process. Basically, the idea is to encode these transmission coefficients in the element of this bulk optic experiment. So here we have a Sagnac interferometer and then a Max Zehnder interferometer. If you set the angles of these half-wave plates and if you arrange, for instance, the setup in this way, you manage to reproduce exactly the output state of an amplitude damping channel. So let me just tell you that in such a case, we encoded our degrees of freedom into the vertical and horizontal polarization of the photon. So, and these are the results. So there are some regions of the parameter space where the map psi psi and phi phi are entanglement breaking, while in the same region of parameters, we manage to restore entanglement. So here, of course, you see that the experimental data are not exactly the one described by the theory, even if, I mean, they are quite good, but they are not exactly the same. And this is due to the fact that we have losses in the system and also because of the fact that the nominal value of all this stuff that we had in our bulk optic setup is not exactly the one that you really have in the laboratory. So here, in the first part of my seminar, I just wanted to give you the rough idea of these tricks with quantum maps. And in order to do this, I just wanted to focus my attention on the discrete case scenario, because it's the simplest one. Actually, we have been able to study also the continuous time limit, in particular, both the Markovian and the non-Markovian evolution. And actually, this work has been done with Sabrina here in the audience. If you are interested on this, I can come back this during the question or in the next section. Or please come to me and ask. So now I want to move to the second topic, which deals with quantum measurement. It is a very recent work that I've been done with that I have done in collaboration with Paola Verrucchi, Alessandro Cuccoli and Caterina Foti from Florence, and with Vittorio Giovannetti in Pisa. So, and our idea, once again, was trying to describe the quantum measurement process using our tools from Open Quantum Systems. But before speaking about evolution, let me just tell you two words on the quantum, on what is a quantum measurement process, no? Basically, you have a system which speaks with an apparatus, and after that we have some output production with a given probability distribution. So our question was, is it possible to establish a dynamical description mapping the input state into the output state of the system? In order to answer to this question, we also have to look at the state of the apparatus, which will now play the role of the environment. So basically, we will consider the system and the environment and the apparatus as a global closed system undergoing a unitary transformation. But what we really have to require is that we have to find a way to encode the information about the outputs into the state of the environment, because they are exactly the state of the environment what we read. Okay, let me start with projective measurement. This problem has been attacked many years ago, first by von Neumann and then by Ozawa. And so when we speak about a projective measurement, we basically describe them in terms of an observable characterizing the system that we want to retrieve. So here I wrote the spectral decomposition for such observables in terms of the projectors. And of course, such projectors are useful in order to write the gamma high, the theta state, and the probability associated to each outcome. So von Neumann showed that this kind of measurement can be always described by writing a unitary transformation characterized by this very simple Hamiltonian, where on one hand we have the observable applied on the system, on the other hand we have a self-adjoint operators characterizing the pointer, the apparatus. So if we write the evolution in this way, basically, we have exactly the structure that we would like to have, because there exists a one-to-one correspondence between the state of the system after, just before the measurement, and the state of the environment where we have encoded our information. When is this process optimal? It is optimal when the state of the environment where the information is encoded become orthogonal. And this happens in the limit of a macroscopic apparatus and after waiting the so-called decoherence time. So if you trace the apparatus, if you trace the environment, you retrieve exactly the state prescribed by the theory. In other words, here we manage, I mean, not we, but von Neumann managed to write the correct Steinspring representation for this quantum channel. We're now basically exploiting this unitary transformation and then tracing away the environment. Now, what happens for POVMs? First of all, what are POVMs? POVMs are more general measurements in which the measurement operators are no more orthogonal. They are not orthogonal, but they still need to give us a decomposition of the unity, and this is useful, and this is, I mean, it is required because we need the probability to sum to one. So it is basically the way in which we encode also, you see here, we retrieve this probability as a function of such measurement operators. Now, the question is it possible, again, to write a model which maps the initial state into an output state where now I still have a one-to-one correspondence between this gamma high, the theta state, and the final state of the environment? And the answer is not. And the reason behind this is that the fact that is related to the fact that such operators are no more orthogonal. Let me explain this better. So, while in the case of projective measurement, we have that the fact that at arbitrary time, the state of the environment are no more orthogonal becomes compensated by the fact that here we have projectors. Since this is no more true for the case of POVMs, This means that we cannot write a map which is completely positive from the initial state to any given time. So we have to change a little bit the strategy. And we use the Neimark theorem for POVMs, which basically tells us that we can reproduce any POVM by basically take an ancillary system, let this ancillary system evolve in a unit, with a unitary transformation coupled with the system, and then perform a projective measurement on the ancilla. If you write the measurement operators in this way, you manage to write a POVM. So a first tentative could be, okay, let us use the Neimark theorem and write such projective operators acting both on the system and the ancilla. Now I'm happy because if I have such orthogonal projectors, I can do exactly what von Neumann did. I can apply, I can wait enough time, I can use this large limit, large dimensional apparatus, and so on and so forth. But the question is, what happens at the level of the principal system? So actually, if this method on one end let us reproduce the correct probability distribution, actually, if we trace both the ancilla and the apparatus, we do not retrieve the state prescribed by POVM. So we really need to go beyond standard decoherence. And basically, this is, was our solution. We said, okay, what does the Neimark theorem tell us? It just gives us a unitary transformation mapping the initial state of the system into an output state where we have such measurement operators applied on the system, and we are some orthogonal state where we read our information. So what we finally have to do is writing an Hamiltonian which such that at a given time the unitary transformation is exactly the one prescribed by Neimark. So notice that in this description, I completely get rid of this net division between the apparatus and the ancilla. I just have to couple the system with another system that now I call ancilla. And so this was, this is the first solution that we give to the problem. Basically, we decomposed the initial state and the final state in terms of a basis of the Hilbert space of the system, and we managed to write this Hamiltonian, which looks like a superposition of Pauli matrices, swapping the initial element of the initial state and the final and the basis element of the final state. So let's see what happens if we use this Hamiltonian. So this is how the system evolves. We have that it becomes written in terms of a coherent superposition between its initial state and the final state where these measurement operators appear. So this means that there exists at least some precise time in which we can get rid of the initial state of the system and reduce the state of the system exactly to what we would like to have. This means that if we read the ancilla exactly at that time, we have what we want, because now we have a correspondence between the system evolved according to the measurement operators and the ancillary state, which are orthogonal. So this is nice, but let me stress that it requires to look at the system just a specific time. In order to go beyond this, we have to restore some macroscopicity. Basically, we have done this by introducing some degeneracy degrees of freedom. And now this is how the Hamiltonian of the system and the ancilla look like. Basically, it is nothing more than the first excitation setter of a spin chain with first neighboring coupling, which is a model exploited in state transfer problem. Actually, if we write the Hamiltonian in this way, basically the state of the system and the ancilla evolved in this way. We have the initial state of the system and the ancilla, a superposition between them, a coherent superposition, and finally, There exists an interval of times which scales with the degeneracy of the ancilla that I have introduced, in which we can pick up a time at which we just, at which basically we can get rid of this part. In other words, now I have the correct link between the state of the apparatus that I read and the information that and the output information. But let me stress that by construction, now these states are orthogonal at all times. Of course, this works also for density matrices. What is the take-home message? The take-home message is that while in the case of standard decoherence, the fact that the state of the environment are not orthogonal at all times implies that the transformation from the initial state to the final state is not completely, is not guaranteed to be completely positive, this can be restored by requiring that the state of the environment, if you want, of the ancilla, become orthogonal at all times. So, once again, we have been able to write the Steinspring representation of the map by writing such expression for the unitary transformation between the ancilla and the system. So, these are my conclusions. Basically, I have two take-home messages. On one hand, if you deal with this very noisy quantum map, there are many strategies. If the map is not tremendous, if still some correlations survive, you can use the standard error correction protocols. Otherwise, I have shown you some trick. On the other hand, if we can exploit the open quantum system formalism to describe the quantum measurement process, but in order to attack POVM, remember that we have to go beyond standard decoherence. And so let me just leave you with these open questions. In particular, let me advise that Paola Verrucchi, who is the co-author of my last presentation, will be here and attend the program. So please go and speak with her if you are interested in this topic. And so these are my open questions. Thank you for your attention.
So thank you very much for this nice talk. So is there any question?
So I have two questions. Then the first one, when you mentioned filtering operation, it is not trace-preserving map, isn't it?
Can you repeat?
So when you say filtering operations, when you you put filtering operation between two quantum channels, then you entanglement can survive. And when you show the example, when you say filtering operation, is it trace-preserving or non-preserving?
Actually, I didn't really understand what you said.
So no. When you say filtering
the
operation,
filtering, sure. It's trace preserving. Yeah. The filter, you mean? Filtering operation.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a legitimate quantum channel.
Okay.
Yeah, it has to be. Otherwise, it wouldn't be physical.
Okay. Then the next question. So you showed the example cut and paste scheme. Yeah. So do you know any property of the channel? So is it like PPT preserving or? So they are not entanglement breaking, but do you know if they are TPT preserving or both one of them should be MPT or something like this?
I don't know if I mean, for sure, they once again, they are legitimate maps. So of course they preserve, they are completely positive.
Do you know any example both of them are TPT?
Actually not, I don't know.
I'm not sure if this is working.
Oh.
Antonella, can you elaborate a little bit more about the... So you say that you introduce degeneracy in order to go towards macroscopicity.
Yes.
So can you elaborate more a little bit on this point?
Okay.
Thanks.
So basically, in this model, you see I decompose the final state into a basis of the system and the ancilla here. No? And here, in particular, the sum goes between 1 and n gamma, which is the number of output that I get. While here, I have almost the same one, but I introduce this degenerate state. So the shape of the final state is almost the same. But here I introduce, for each gamma high, a set of states which are orthogonal to each other. And this is the trick that let me finally have the ancilla state orthogonal to each other. If I don't use this trick, they are not. Okay, maybe I have to point out something. I mean, this is one of the possible descriptions, not the only one. Okay, because the Neimark theorem gives us the freedom to choose the unitary transformation in many possible ways. This is just one solution.
And why do you say that this corresponds and going beyond the standard model of decoherence?
Because in the standard model of decoherence, so here maybe I didn't write the equation, I just have a plot. So in the standard model of decoherence, the state of the environment are not orthogonal at all times. So if you start with this initial state of the environment and you apply this unitary transformation, basically you go from this state to such state which are given by e to the minus it such operator and the eigenvalue of this observable corresponding to the gamma high. So you see, if you apply a unitary transformation, what I want to say is that at arbitrary times, this state e to the minus t o gamma high, this small o gamma high, O xi are not orthogonal at all times. Okay, they become orthogonal if you do two things. On one end, you take environment big. On the other end, you wait enough time. Okay, so you at arbitrary time, you are here, then you can end up here. In our model, the state of the ancilla are always orthogonal by construction. And this is the trick.
Antonella, could you please comment on this paper about non-Markovianity you mentioned?
Yeah, okay. Thank you for this question. Okay. I prepared some slide on this. Okay, so basically we say that we have non-Markovianity where we have this memory effect when the system, when the environment sends back the information to the system. And we know that in such a case, correlation typically have a non-monotonic behavior. So in particular, we studied these many models, but let me just tell you something about this amplitude damping time-local amplitude damping channel, where you have a qubit coupled with a bosonic environment. And this is the plot of the concurrence between half of the system on which you don't do anything and the other part that you let evolve according to this local operation. So you see that there is now a set of times where the map becomes entanglement breaking. So basically, with Sabrina, we managed to prove that one way to actually correct and this process and basically preserve correlation consists in basically instantaneously resetting the environment. So, of course, such resetting must be done before entanglement dies, just here. And according to how far you are from this point, basically you have that you can preserve entanglement in this way, in such a way that it even goes beyond the Markovian limit, or it goes in this way. And this is a kind of relationship between Zeno and quantum Zeno effect. So this was basically what we have done.
More questions? Well, I also have one question. Yeah. So what is the relationship between this scheme and the collisional interactions, these schemes in which you can actually reconstruct a master equation which is non-Markovian by considering also a similar system like the one that you have, in which you have, for instance, spins that are coupled to ancillas.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also couple the ancillas in between, so within along the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you do that, you realize that you recover the reduced evolution for your system to be non-Markovian.
Mm-hmm.
So is this also what happens in your case? Do you also have effectively an induced non-Markovian evolution in your system?
Actually, we do the opposite.
Uh-huh.
So we take a Markovian master equation, without really discussing exactly how this non-Markovianity ends up. And basically we found a way to resetting the environment. So it's maybe the opposite point of view.
Okay, so it's the other way around.
Yeah,
so you
the other
reset
way
the state of the environment at each step.
Yes.
Okay. And then regarding the first part, you are considering a map when you say you have an entanglement breaking map.
Yes.
Is the one in which you one time apply it and then you destroy the
yes.
entanglement.
Yes.
Have you also thought about what happens when you have like a real noise in an experiment where you have a dynamical map that is actually acting along the time?
Maybe, okay.
Is there any of those schemes that you're thinking about more similar to this?
Maybe what looks more simple from a physical interpretation could be looking at the continuous time scenario. And here, still in this paper of cut and paste, we have this Lindblad master equation, which basically describes the ways in which polarization qubit evolve in optical fibers.
Mm-hmm.
So as before, no, you have that you can write the input in terms of the output, the output in terms of the input by integrating this Lindblad master equation. And the idea, and for instance, what you say is that after a given length of your optical fiber, I don't have time, but I have space, it's exactly the same. After a given length, entanglement is broken, no?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Now, let me take two optical fibers, which are distinguished by a different Hamiltonian here. On one end, I have plus sigma x, on the other end, minus.
Mm-hmm.
And let me do the same trick. So let me really cut the optical fibers in two parts and attack them one after the other. And basically, this is the effect. As far as you increase the number of cutting and reshuffling, basically you manage to preserve correlations. You manage to increase the length at which this correlation. So maybe this is, I don't know, an example more feasible in experiments.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you. So, more questions?
Just to make sure I understand, thank you for the talk. I really enjoyed it. The entanglement breaking maps, those are maps that are unitary, correct?
maps.
The evolution from that map is unitary.
And, no.
Oh, it's not.
No.
Okay.
They're not unitary.
Okay.
The evolution of the system and the environment is unitary.
Okay, right.
But the evolution of it cannot. Otherwise, correlation were preserved.
Right. Okay, so are these maps that you are applying to the system, you're choosing them, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then, and so they're not reversible because they're not unitary, because you're focusing on a subsystem.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
So, any more questions? Well, if not, let's thank the speaker again and speakers of the whole session.